Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? This is Kobe Bryant from the Los Angeles Lakers, and you're listening to the Average Joe Sports Show.
Get out your figurative umbrellas. It's about to rain literal sports knowledge up in here. Live from a metaphor, it's the Average Joe Sports on the Sports Geeks Radio Network. Ahoy, everybody. Welcome to the program. Joel Cordes along for the ride with you as usual. Big, big show planned. We're going to talk Super Bowl preview time. I don't know what all the Roman numerals are, but it's a big game nonetheless. We'll talk with Eric Friends and Jeff Scholl, both from BleacherReport.com. They are the respective FCs for the New England Patriots and New York Giants. We'll give them a chance to square off before the big boys do. We'll talk a little Major League Baseball with Dan Luig, the smartest man alive, will join us later on the program. And joining me right now on the show, we have a guy that I've known for what? It's almost 3 years at this point, Will Liebenberg from BleacherReport.com. Man, it seems like a long time since you were an intern extraordinaire with us, and Will has carved out a niche for himself, one of the best golf writers at Bleacher Report, and a good friend. Will, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Joel. I really appreciate it. And yeah, the idea of it being 3 years is pretty insane.
It has gone by in a flash. This week, Will, you and I were talking probably about midweek or so, talking about doing some golf stuff, and I said, yeah, I just don't know how much there's going to be. It just doesn't seem to be a very big weekend for golf. And you said, ah, contraire, this is actually a very, very big weekend for golf, and you turned out to be right on a lot of different levels. Tell us about Tiger Woods. Tell us about Abu Dhabi. Tell us about why this weekend mattered so much.
Yeah, well, you know, anytime Tiger Woods plays in the field and is competing, I think it's a big deal. I think people are excited to see him, whether or not they support him, whether or not they, you know, oppose a resurgence for his game. I think people get excited about him. And, you know, it wasn't just any tournament that he was coming in to play. He's got a lot of hype and he's got a lot of momentum right now because, you know, he just won the Chevron World Challenge about a month and a half ago, which was his first win in, you know, more than 2 years since Torrey Pines at the U.S. Open, where he came out on one leg pretty much and won. So this was a really big victory for him. But in addition, he played well in Australia, first in the Australian Open, and then he helped the Americans win the President's Cup as well. So he's got a lot of that momentum, starting to show glimpses of his old self. And this week at Abu Dhabi, you know, it had a lot of hype as people were really wondering whether he can bring that old Tiger self to a big stage among the best players in the world. You know, you got Luke Donald playing with him, Rory McIlroy, Graham McDowell, and he put up a really, really solid showing. Finished third, but, you know, there's just some glaring holes in his game still, and as he says, he needs to just keep going out there, keep being competitive, and he did that this week, so it was good to see.
Is it safe to say or safe to expect in the case of Tiger Woods as he moves into, you know, this next stage of his career? He definitely bottomed out, and now he's going to, you know, become that cagey veteran who's going to be possibly, you know, more solid than spectacular. Can we expect to see him compete, but be surprised when he, you know, wins major tournaments like this? I fully expect it'll happen occasionally, but I don't think we're going to see a run of dominance from him like we did before. Is it safe to say that those days are really dead and gone at this point?
You know, I really think that that's kind of up to the individual, up to their perspective, because the most striking difference that I see about Tiger Woods now versus Tiger Woods of old is that he used to have that dominating quality that was sort of Michael Jordan-esque, you know? He wasn't just winning golf tournaments. He was beating the field by 6 to 10 strokes. I mean, it was unheard of. He was, you know, crushing the field. Whereas now, at least, you know, over the last year and a half or so, he's competitive. And that's a really good thing to see because obviously he's still working to get his rhythm back, which, you know, through injuries, through, you know, traumatic personal experiences, any athlete is going to struggle to find their groove. But he's not beating the field by a lot. Even that win that he had a couple months ago at the Chevron, you know, he needed back-to-back birdies on 17 and 18 to close it out against Zach Johnson, which, you know, was great to see. It was kind of classic drama for Tiger. But at the same time, he may not have that slew of victories each year that we've been so used to seeing. I mean, he had a year with, you know, more than 10 victories worldwide. So I don't really know if that's in store for him, but I know that the one thing he wants is major championships, and we'll see if he can grab one of those this year. I'm hoping he can, at least one at the Masters.
Typically, the beginning of the year here in January and February, it's kind of a downtime, I guess, with a lot of golf obviously is being played outside of the United States just for weather concerns, Southern Hemisphere and so forth. And yet golf is such a year-round sport. But as we kind of kick off what feels like the beginning of the season here, who are the events and the players that you're really amped up for as we enter 2012?
Yeah, well, I'm really excited, well, obviously, to see Tiger play again, but he's going to be playing in 2 weeks at Pebble Beach, which is, you know, one of the greatest golf courses in the world right now, not just because of its aesthetic features and beauty in that way, but it's the most challenging golf course there is, pretty much. And in 2000, Tiger had a historic U.S. Open there where he won and beat the field by 12 strokes. So to see him back there and also to get some revenge, I think, for just kind of losing down the stretch to Graham McDowell a couple years ago at the U.S. Open at Pebble, I think that's going to be a really fun event to watch. And, you know, in 2 weeks he could close some of the gaps that he had this week too. But in terms of what's to come for golf, you know, some people find golf to be just kind of a sleep aid. It can really just, you know, you turn it on, you pass out. And I think that right now is actually a really exciting time in the game, especially because you got a guy like Rory McIlroy, who is just 23 years old, and there's been so much hype about him as, you know, the next superstar. But I think it's going to be even bigger than that. I think that he can be kind of the next icon of the golf world. And it's not just that he's got a major championship under his belt, which came at the 2011 U.S. Open, but that he's been incredibly consistent over the last couple of years. He's been contending in really big events consistently. And that's incredibly hard to do for any golfer at any time, and he's only 23 years old. So there's something in him, there's some kind of drive that I think is really making an impact, and it's going to continue to make that kind of impact as things go on in the golf world. And I'm also really excited about Luke Donald, who's an Englishman and who had just one of the most memorable and breathtaking, you know, seasons last year, in which he topped the money list on both the European Tour and the PGA Tour, which is unheard of. It's literally never been done, not even by Tiger Woods. The only thing that's kind of holding him back right now is that he's got the reputation that Phil Mickelson had for a while, which is that he's the best player currently without a major championship under his belt. So he needs to grab one of those. He needs to really bring his game, which is really a short game dominated one, to a major championship and get that off his back.
Will Liebenberg, Sage golf writer from BleacherReport.com, joining us here on the Average Joe Sports Show. Dan Lewig will be dropping by in just a little while. Smartest Man Alive will talk some Major League Baseball with us. Of course, the Prince Fielder signing, what that's going to do to the AL Central and maybe Major League Baseball in general. Later on in the program, of course, we have to preview Super Bowl 46. We'll bring on a couple of other Bleacher reporters. That'll be Eric Frenz and Jeff Scholl. They'll talk the New England Patriots and New York Giants FCs for both of those teams. A lot of big stuff coming up. will the stars have aligned in just sort of a way that we can move from your favorite sport to my favorite sport and still cover both of our favorite teams in the NBA? It turns out that, yes, your Los Angeles Lakers and my Minnesota Timberwolves are squaring off tonight. And for the first time in what seems forever, even though the Lakers have a 15-game winning streak against the Wolves, this one seems as even as it's ever been. Your thoughts just briefly here before we go on to the break. What are you looking forward to in this game? Of course, by the time we re-air later in the week, this one will be over. But what are you looking forward to watching?
Well, I'm looking forward to extending that to 16. But, you know, I want to see a variety of players contribute, okay? Because I understand that we have Kobe Bryant, and I understand that he's going to take, you know, 25, 30 shots a game, and I think that's pretty well known at this point among the team, among Mike Brown. But we need our bigs to show up. It absolutely boggles my mind that you got 2 7-footers on the floor on the same team, and neither of them can really make a consistent impact game by game, you know? And I think that Andrew Bynum really needs to come up big tonight. I think that he's got a lot to prove, considering he started the season so well and is now sort of tapered off a bit. And I think also I expect a lot out of Gasol, who, you know, comes out against the Clippers and has a huge 23-10 game. And then last night against the Bucks can hardly, you know, challenge shots, moving slowly. You know, he got 15 rebounds, but like 10 points or something. So that's not the kind of thing that Lakers need right now. And there needs to just be a variety of contribution throughout the team.
I'm looking for the Minnesota Timberwolves to try and push the tempo on what has become a surprisingly slow L.A. Lakers team. If they're going to change history, and they are at home as the Lakers go on, what, it's like 7 out of the next 8 games are on the road here.
Yeah.
Lakers come off that big loss to the Milwaukee Bucks the other night. Kevin Love has really struggled. In fact, the Lakers are one of the only teams, if the only team, in the NBA that he's really struggled against in the last 3 years. I think the length of Pau Gasol and Andrew Bynum really give him fits on the boards. The Wolves are going to hope that Nikola Pekovic, who's filling in for Darko a little bit here, that he's going to be able to use that to help them on the front line. The question will be, who in the world on the Lakers can guard Ricky Rubio? There haven't been a lot of people who have really gotten his number yet, and I really don't think it's going to be Derek Fisher or any of their rookie point guards. The Wolves are just getting back to full strength. The game is in Minnesota. We'll talk about what's going right for the Wolves and what the Lakers need to fix, as well as a couple of other topics. That's all coming up next here on the Average Joe Show on the Sports Geeks Radio Network.
What would you say you do here?
I invented the piano key necktie! I admitted it!
That is correct.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills! Nothing! You've got nothing! Nothing!
Who are these people?
Well, it's interesting, sir. As stupid as they appear, they're actually very good at paperwork. Quite an anomaly.
I've got a giant stack of papers in front of me right now. Funny you ask. Welcome back. It's the Average Joe Sports Show here on the Sports Geeks Radio Network. Joel Cordes and BleacherReport.com's Will Liebenberg hanging out with you. We'll be joined by Dan Luig a little bit later on in the program to talk some Major League Baseball. We'll preview the Super Bowl with Eric Friends and Jeff Scholl. That will be coming up later on in the show. And right now, talking a little bit of NBA, have the Wolves and the Lakers on in the background. It's really kind of funny, Will, and I guess it just does show the respective histories of these two teams. Couldn't be more excited that the Wolves are sniffing around 500 right now for the first time in half a decade. They've been exciting. They've been fun to watch. They're just getting back to full strength. J.J. Barea is still a little bit a ways away, but Brad Miller, Martell Webster, both in uniform. Michael Beasley has come back. And there's a lot of depth, a lot of athleticism with the team. They still haven't completely nailed down their rotation yet, but young guys like Derek Williams and even Wayne Ellington, who was a Kevin McHale pick, who was a David Kahn pick from a couple years ago that people really thought was going to be a bust. A lot of these guys are starting to pan out. Beasley has been solid when not hurt. Anthony Randolph has given some contributions, and they got those two young guys for absolutely nothing. Ricky Rubio has been worth the wait. Wes Johnson, while shooting a horrible percentage, has actually fit in fairly decently with the starting lineup. And you just get the sense that they can't go anywhere but up at this point. On the flip side, Will, for the Lakers, I think people are hitting the panic button here as they get a little bit closer to the 500 mark, as they're dipping down in that level. People are beginning to scream for Dwight. And I guess my question for you is, what needs to be fixed and what can't be fixed with the Lakers quick enough? And if they don't get Dwight Howard, then what's the answer?
Yeah, well, I was actually just talking to my brother a little while ago, a big LA fan, and he said something that I thought was pretty funny and pretty telling of the moment. And that's when Lakers fans are praying for Steve Blake to come back. You know, there's a problem in Los Angeles. And, you know, there's just such a variety of issues plaguing the Lakers right now. And you kind of mentioned it initially with the fact that the horrible guard play remains unaddressed and it remains a debilitating factor on the court. Derek Fisher might be a good guy, but he shouldn't be a starting point guard in the NBA. And unfortunately for Lakers fans, neither should this kid Darius Morris or even Steve Blake. You know, we need a prototypical point guard, someone who brings some speed to what is absolutely a very slow team. But at the same time, the flip side of that is if you're going to be sort of a slow team and not have a point guard you can really rely on for that speed and moving the ball around, perhaps use that methodical nature of the team and slow down the defense, you know, slow down and make other teams come to you. And that's why also I make a really big deal about using Bynum and Gasol as much as you can and not rely necessarily on Kobe, who has, you know, gotten just as much skepticism as he typically gets each year. But, I mean, especially about how many shots he takes and everything. But these guys are phenomenal big men, and they have a variety of moves, but they need to become more consistent, and that means they need to get the ball more, and they need more opportunities. And the other issue that I think is pretty big is that Mike Brown has come in as the Lakers coach, but I don't really feel like he, you know, exudes the respect that a Phil Jackson had, which obviously he's not going to have right away or anything like that, but he comes in as a defense-first coach, and I really appreciate that. And he also comes in having coached LeBron, and so in that way, there was almost that sense that his experience with a superstar-type player, and in this case, Kobe Bryant, wouldn't be as difficult of a transition. But instead, we've seen, you know, Kobe still dropping 30 shots a game, the like minuscule production from the rest of the team, and Brown finds himself in a situation very similar to Cleveland, unfortunately, but now his players are wearing Lakers jerseys. So I think it's an uphill battle, but I think that as long as you've got a guy like Kobe on your team, he can create some drive, and I think he really needs to.
As a Lakers fan, Will, I'm sure you do want Dwight Howard, but I guess the question that's beginning to pop up in my mind as we see all of these other problems around them, you know, you talked about the fact that front court really is the Lakers' one strength, and were they to trade Andrew Bynum straight up for Dwight Howard, and if they panic enough to the point that it becomes a Pau Gasol and Andrew Bynum for Dwight Howard, that really is trading strength for strength. That doesn't address any of the backcourt issues that they talked about. I'm sorry, signing Gilbert Arenas, if that does indeed happen, is not going to address the issue. If you watched him play last year in Orlando, he was nothing but an average backup NBA point guard, and maybe that's still an improvement over what the Lakers are trotting out right now, but it doesn't fix that issue. So if it's not Dwight Howard, and maybe I guess I should ask the question, do they need Dwight Howard as badly as everybody thinks, or should they be looking at moving Bynum or Gasol for maybe another wing who can fill the bucket up a little bit?
Personally, I don't agree with taking on Dwight, and I think that, you know, I understand a variety of the reasons for people wanting him. I mean, he's by far the best center in the NBA and has been for a few seasons, but I don't believe that the way he plays and the way the team centers around him will mesh well with what the Lakers have, and that is Kobe Bryant. And it's not just the dynamic that I see those two having that could create an issue, but I really believe that, you know, for as much, you know, tension that's built up in Los Angeles over, you know, Kobe, Bynum, and Gasol, you know, being consistently inconsistent, I still think that it's early in the season. And even in a shortened season, those three guys can get something together and really create a rhythm for themselves down the road. In terms of what we need to go get, we need a point guard. There's no question about that. And I don't know a single L.A. fan who doesn't shrug and just, you know, wince at the idea of having Chris Paul potentially on our team and, you know, what happened there. That is just an awful situation, one that I personally am still boggled by. But, you know, going out and getting a point guard, ideally going after a guy like Deron Williams, you know, I'd get rid of Powell or Bynum for Deron Williams in a second. And I think he's worth it. And I think that's a huge glaring void on our team without a point guard.
I agree. In fact, if a three-team deal was needing to be swung, I would go for Deron Williams at this point, too, because it would probably only take giving up Gasol or Bynum. That's just the difference in premium that you pay for a point guard versus a big man. At this point, with the scoring that they need, you know, it would sound like anathema for me to say this, but what about trading Pau Gasol back to something like the Memphis Grizzlies, who are so hard up for scoring help right now? Could you bring Rudy Gay and another one of their wings? They've got way too many wings to begin with and a lot of shooters and guys who can handle the ball, and yet have been waiting on Zach Randolph, who might be out for the season now, it's looking like. Darrell Arthur, the backup power forward, was out. Maurice Space is not the answer there if they want to make the playoffs. You know, you look at somebody like the Houston Rockets, who wanted Gasol so badly, and it's rumored that they still do. You know, send Powell over to Houston, see if you can get Luis Scola and maybe Goran Dragic back, a pick. I don't think they're going to give up Scola and Kyle Lowry at this point with as well as Lowry has played. But there seems to be other options. You know, bringing Dwight Howard in is just a lateral move as far as I'm concerned. Let's make one lateral move in L.A. very, very slightly by a couple of feet, depending on what locker room you're in. Let's go from the Lakers to the Clippers. That, of course, has caught a lot of people's attention. And being that you're a California guy and a Lakers fan, let's get your take here, Will, on the Clippers. Is this a budding rivalry? Is this good motivation for the Lakers, or is this just overblown hype at this point, seeing as how we've only had a couple of weeks' worth of real rivalry games? But when they've squared off, there certainly has been a little more chippiness than usual.
I think it's a variety of issues, and I think that as much as it is a real rivalry, one that I think can actually last and can motivate each team, I think that it's also a lot of media hype. I think it's a lot of people who, you know, just want to make a big deal out of something that really isn't, such as Gasol touching Chris Paul's head or whatever that was, you know. Not a big deal, but people like some drama. And I understand that because, you know, as a Laker fan, I'm all about a little bit of drama if it ends up being the Lakers winning in the end. And at this point, I can't really tell if Chris Paul and, you know, Griffin are going to be this dynamic duo that really sets them aside from every other team in the league. I don't necessarily think that Griffin is going to live up to the potential just yet that he has. I think that he should aspire to be a guy almost like your Kevin Love, who is absolutely phenomenal. And I mean, he's playing, you know, just like an all-star as he should be this year. But I think that team has got some glaring issues. I think that even though they have a lot of solid rebounders, I don't think that they're working as a team on offense as efficiently as they can. And I think that even though Chris Paul, that addition is obviously making a huge difference, not just in team morale, but obviously on the court, I don't think that one player like that is going to make such a substantial difference, even with guys like Jrue Butler and Griffin down low. So I think it's a work in progress, but I think that rivalry has, you know, it has the potential to be something really exciting in L.A.
One thing to keep in mind for the Clippers, at least as I look at them, they definitely have not executed down the stretch in a lot of their games. You're right about Blake Griffin still needing to add that defensive presence. I think he relies a little bit too much on the guys around him to clean up on block shots, especially from his center position. But at the same time, the Clippers have not necessarily been healthy. And the fact that they have such a new team with so many parts and have managed you know, to climb and sniff around the top of the division this early says they're just going to get better if and when they can get healthy. So the sky really is the limit, and I know Lakers fans are just wondering whether these are two ships passing in the night, headed in opposite directions at the moment. That's a tough one to call, but the Lakers do need to make a move. They are always a team that things are good for so long that when there's just a little bit of gray sky on the horizon, people really freak out about that, and the next big move has to come in order to keep everybody, you know, keep everybody sane, basically, in Los Angeles, if there is such a thing.
I was just going to say that also I think being an L.A. fan, you know, is kind of like being an arrogant fan. You're very used to being in the conversation. You're very used to being in contention. And, you know, having a guy like Kobe Bryant on your team for the last decade will do that for you, okay? And having Shaq before that, there's always been one to two really solid, outstanding players on the Lakers that make them key contenders. And I think this year it's just so blatantly obvious that there are, you know, massive issues plaguing the team. And it's not really just one player or one side of the court or, you know, internal issues. It's there. And Lakers fans, you know, have reason to panic. I mean, especially with, as you're saying, this Clippers squad that only has opportunity to rise in the division and, you know, in L.A.
Well, the rest of us call that being spoiled, but I do know what you're talking about. My brothers-in-law are Boston Red Sox fans, and you just get that feeling. Let's wrap this up here. I'm just wanting to mention that we'll talk a little bit next week about the Steve Nash situation with the Phoenix Suns. The Suns set this definitely arriving for his career and for that team as they are struggling even to remain in the hunt. Where can he go? Should he go? Is the New York Knicks the way to end his career? We'll talk all about that next week here on the Average Joe Sports Show. For now, I want to bid you, Will, even do thanks you so much for coming on the program, talking a little golf, little basketball with me. We'll definitely be on again, my friend.
Thanks very much. I appreciate it.
Coming up in the program here next, we have Dan Luig, the smartest man alive, joins us for some Major League Baseball talk. Jeff Schall and Eric Friends from BleacherReport.com will also be aboard. We will preview the Super Bowl. That's all coming up next here on the Average Joe Sports Show on the Sports Geeks Radio Network.
Cut my egg.
Your eggs are cut, sir.
Cut my milk.
I can't, sir. It's liquid.
Imbecile. Please, then cut it. You. Bring me the Wall Street Journal. You too. Fight to the death.
You are a madman. I want to party with you.
Now, you kids with your loud music and your Dan Fogelberg, your Zima, hula hoops, and Pac-Man video games, don't you see? People today have attention spans that can only be measured in nanoseconds.
Fiona Trudio, I love his music. I do. I'm a Michael Bolton fan.
Yes! That's awesome!
Speaking of big Michael Bolton fans, let's welcome the smartest man alive to the program. He's got a Class D license in cosmic travel and a PhD in life. Dan Luig joins us on the Average Joe Sports Show here on the Sports Geeks Radio Network. Dan, how goes it?
As much as Wade Boggs would give his routine before going to a game by eating a bucket of fried chicken, I begin every time before I come onto the sports show listening to some Michael Bolton.
I don't picture it, but I know what you're talking about. Let's talk a little Major League Baseball, and of course, we can't begin anywhere else but Prince Fielder landing with the Detroit Tigers. We know that the third wheel on this tricycle of doom, Mike Schottie, who's not here with us today as he's on a scouting trip to the Senior Bowl, I believe, big Detroit Tigers fan, and I quickly texted him and a couple of my other buddies who are Tigers fans, and me being in Michigan couldn't help but see the excitement around here. But this was really a dark horse move. I mean, this really came out of left field. Prince Fielder to Detroit, I think, grabbed just about everyone but the most inside of insiders by surprise. Why did this deal have to get done, and how did the Detroit Tigers come out of nowhere to snatch probably the biggest prize outside of Albert Pujols in the offseason here?
Well, I think with this one, this was as big of a surprise as, if you remember a few years back, Matt Holliday going to the St. Louis Cardinals. No one saw that one coming. As much as everyone saw Victor Martinez getting injured and being out for the year, no one thought that, well, yeah, a one-year deal for somebody like maybe a Carlos Pena would make sense. But what are you going to do with how are you going to, A, afford to put another big-time contract like Prince Fielder into that team? And then also, where's he going to go when you arguably have already the best first baseman in all of baseball outside of maybe someone by the name of Albert Pujols? But once again, the Detroit Tigers owner, Ilitch, is a guy who's determined to win, and costs is not something that it gets in his way when there's a guy he wants to target and to compete for that championship. So Detroit going for Prince Fielder makes sense when you remember that type of thing and remember how that's one of those teams that always seems to work with Scott Boras and getting those deals done. You can think of a team like Washington as well as another team that works well with Scott Boras' clients. And honestly, bigger of a winner than Prince Fielder is Scott Boras. I mean, everyone saw this and saw how late this was going, and a lot of the players that have been left out towards the end were Scott Boras' clients, and people were finally starting to ask that question of, has he finally lost his touch? Is he still the super agent that he's always been known to be? Are teams starting to shy away from him and not give him the types of deals that he has in the past? And this deal showed with a resounding emphasis that he still has it, and definitely reestablished his credibility among players as the agent to go for if you want big bucks.
I guess the big question, of course, now is, where does this land the Tigers, a team that was in contention throughout most of last year? Where does this land the Tigers in the vast array of contending teams in the AL? Obviously, the Texas Rangers are at the top. The New York Yankees and the Boston Red Sox have to be in the conversation because they are every year. The LA Angels of Anaheim now are there because of Albert Pujols. Does this vault the Detroit Tigers to the forefront, or does the fact that, you know, Victor Martinez is hurt and Prince Fielder in some ways is really just a replacement for Martinez, does this just keep the Tigers at status quo as far as you're concerned?
Well, what this does for Detroit is it allows them to establish themselves still as the number one team in the AL Central. They're the team that has the most likely chance to win that division and to go on to the postseason, especially when you remember that the rest of that division is in disarray. The White Sox are in rebuilding mode. They traded away Carlos Quentin, among others, over there. So they're kind of in a rebuild mode. The Minnesota Twins, it depends upon their health. Justin Morneau and Joe Mauer, how well do those guys bounce back? And can Carl Pavano also reduplicate his numbers from last season? The Cleveland Indians started out well, but it started fading. They added Derek Lowe, but you still have to wonder, do they have enough offense? They're among the worst teams in the American League and one scored last year. So Detroit has done a good job now of establishing themselves at the top of that pack. Now, how do they compare to the rest of the American League? That's going to be an interesting question that we'll find out early on. But I guess the best way to answer that is to say, offensively, there's no better 3-4 hitters in the lineup than a Miguel Cabrera and Prince Fielder duo. And I think between that and Cy Young winner Justin Verlander and some of the pitching things that they have there, they're definitely going to be one of the top three, top four teams in the American League at this point going into spring training.
And very quickly, which big names remain, if any? The hot stove is burning, but it's a slow burn at this point. Which names are still out there that are worth mentioning, and where will they go?
There's only two names that are worth mentioning, and that's Edwin Jackson and Roy Oswalt. Edwin Jackson is the last of the Scott Boras clients that should get a multi-year deal. The reports are right now that there's a few teams that have offered him three-year deals, but he's not made a pick yet. I think they're holding out for a team to offer in that fourth year. That should be completed within the next week or two as to where his destination will lie. Roy Oswalt is kind of just taking his time. I think the top two teams right now that are vying for his services are the St. Louis Cardinals and the Texas Rangers.
Dan Luig, smartest man alive, joining us here on the Average Joe Sports Show on the Sports Geeks Radio Network. One final Major League Baseball question before we head to the break. Dan, baseball is apparently adding more wild card spots coming up already this year. That's a little bit of a surprise. We know they have been talking about it, but headlines just running with that here in the last couple of days. As a lifelong baseball fan yourself, does this add more excitement to the game, or is this messing with history too much?
For baseball purists, I believe this is something that they will eventually love. And it's for this reason. It puts more of an emphasis on winning your division. If you don't win your division and you're one of the two teams or the two teams that get into the wild card, well, then 162 games worth of a season and all that effort comes down to one game. It becomes a sudden death type of a scenario where it's one game between those two teams determines who moves on to face the division winners in the same normal format that we've seen in the postseason. What baseball is trying to do with this, besides, again, that added emphasis the way it used to be on winning the divisions before the wild card even came into existence, is to create that magic that was there on the last day of the regular season, game 162 from last year. If you remember the Atlanta Braves and trying to see how that would go with the National League and then them falling out of the wild card, and you see the Red Sox doing the same with the Rays winning and the closing strikes of that game to propel themselves into the playoffs. That's what baseball is trying to get, is that excitement to keep September going versus teams just establishing themselves as, well, we already have it in the bag. It doesn't matter if we win the division or wild card at all, so we're going to rest our players and coast down to the stretch and position things. Well, this makes it where you can't do that and is going to add some definite excitement to the month of September.
Coming up next here on the Average Joe Sports Show on the Sports Geeks Radio Network, Eric Frenz and Jeff Scholl from BleacherReport.com. They're the New York Giants and New England Patriots featured columnists. They'll be joining us here. We're going to preview the Super Bowl that's coming up next here on the Average Joe Sports Show on the Sports Geeks Radio Network. Don't go anywhere.
What exactly is your problem?
Here goes. I sped. I followed too closely. I ran a stop sign. I almost hit a Chevy. I sped some more. I failed to yield at a crosswalk. I changed lanes in the intersection. I changed lanes without signaling while running a red light and speeding. Food, got no job, our pets, and they're falling off!
What an unexpected and blood-curdling surprise.
They've done studies, you know. Everybody works. 60% of the time, it works. Every time.
That doesn't make sense. It's science.
Talk about strange science. The Average Joe Sports Show here on the Sports Geeks Radio Network. Joel Cordes hanging out with you. Sans Mike Schottie this week. He will be back next week, I believe, here on the Average Joe Sports Show. He's down scouting the Senior Bowl, so I guess that counts as on assignment. Want to welcome a couple of newcomers to the Average Joe Sports Show here. Jeff Scholl and Eric Frenz, featured columnists for the New York Giants and New England Patriots, respectively, over at BleacherReport.com. We wanted to bring aboard a couple of experts as we preview this Super Bowl and exciting rematch. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
How's it going, guys?
I want to start, I guess we'll begin from the New England Patriots side of things, only from alphabetical order, Eric, and I guess because, or Jeff, I should say, and record-wise. Let's talk about New England Patriots, and Eric, give me why you think they will win the Super Bowl. Give me the keys to the game for your squad.
Absolutely. I think you know, there are really two major keys here for the Patriots. The biggest one, you have to start with the pass rush and slowing that down and letting Tom Brady get into a rhythm. And, you know, the Giants have had one of the best pass rushing defenses in the NFL this year. I think they ranked third in sacks. And, you know, obviously that front four has been great all season long. And they were able to get a lot of pressure on Brady in Super Bowl 42. They were able to get some pressure marginal on Brady in that regular season game, but you know they got the key pressure at key times and obviously had that strip sack for a fumble down at the 10-yard line, which the Giants were then quickly able to convert into 7 points. And I think that's the type of play that the Giants are going to need to get if they want to come away with a win. The Patriots are going to have to prevent things like that from happening if they want to get a win, and also they're going to have to really figure out how to keep Victor Cruz and Hakeem Nicks from going off. I think that those two obviously are the most dynamic playmaking threats for the Giants, and Eli obviously is great in his own right, but you know, those two receivers really make that offense go, and I think you know, they've obviously proven to be deep threats all season long, so it's going to be up to the Patriots to play sound against the deep pass and really make sure that they keep that keep everything in front of them and keep those guys from breaking off big games.
Jeff, let's flip things to you. From the Giants' perspective, what do they need to do in order to defend their title, not from last year, but the title from the last time these two teams met? There's definitely a lot of revenge factor going on here, and yet there's a lot of deja vu all over again as the Giants really do come into this Super Bowl viewed as the underdogs.
Right, I really just got to reiterate a lot of what Eric said, as Mikey, so for the Giants to win. Not only does it start up front with the Giants' defense, and it has for several years now, but I feel like they have to get to Tom Brady early and often, and they have to get the running game going. That's one thing that the Giants failed to do this year, and they seem to be able to win some of the games without the running game, but the biggest sort of defender for Tom Brady and his high-flying offense is to keep him off the field and on the sideline, and if the Giants can get Ahmad Bradshaw and Brandon Jacobs going early and sort of chew up the clock, which is exactly what they did in their Super Bowl meeting last time, it can really go a long way into helping them win this game. And you know, honestly, last time the Giants and Patriots met, which was the last time the Patriots lost a game, the Giants really didn't play all that well. You know, the Patriots outgained them by several yards, and Wes Welker and Rob Gronkowski went off. Really, the key to that game was the Patriots turning the ball over four times, and I honestly don't think the Giants can count on that happening again because the Patriots take care of the ball so well. So I think the two biggest keys of the game, Eric already mentioned one, is the pass rush. And for the Giants, I feel like they have to get their running game going.
Eric, back to the Patriots a little bit. You talked about what they need to do in order to stop the Giants, obviously their pass rush. But from the more proactive side of things, what do the Patriots need to do in order to get their offense into gear? You know, what schemes are they looking for? Who do they really need to get going? And on the flip side, you know, the Patriots defense, especially their secondary, was much maligned during the regular season, and yet during the playoffs here has been a more than respectable unit. How can they keep that momentum going as well?
Well, those are good questions, and I think that starting with your sort of X factors question, I think that you know, I think getting the screen game going early will be helpful. I think if you can, obviously you want to do anything you can to slow down that pass rush, but I think that the best thing that you could possibly do is to exploit some matchup problems that you have against their back seven. And I think, you know, we haven't seen a lot of running back screens from the Patriots this year, but I think Danny Woodhead could be a big part of the game plan, just because, you know, he does give the linebacking core of the Giants some matchup problems. And I think also we saw, you know, Vernon Davis didn't necessarily have a lot of catches. He only caught the ball three times against them in the NFC Championship game, but he had two touchdowns, and one of those was a really big gainer. So I think Aaron Hernandez could be a really big key in this game, especially considering we're not sure on the health of Rob Gronkowski. I've been watching reports and paying attention to that, and looks like a high ankle sprain. He's still wearing that walking boot, and he should be good to go for the game, but at what percent we still don't really know yet. So I think he'll be part of the game plan, but I think you could see a little bit more here from Hernandez, and I think that'll be good for them. I think that they could really stand to, you know, get the quick game going and run that no huddle offense that they've run pretty well this season, could keep some matchup problems on the field, and also prevent the Giants from rotating their defensive line, because that's been something that they've done really well all season long, is getting fresh guys in there and, you know, and just letting them fly off the handle but right after the quarterback. So, you know, there are a lot of things the Patriots can do here. It's just a question of whether or not they can execute.
Jeff, from the New York Giants side of things, this is a team that's gotten hot at just the right moment yet again. They certainly look dead in the water at points during the regular season. You talked already about the running game issues. A lot of that has been health-related, and yet this really does fall back on Eli Manning and the passing game. for the New York Giants, we know what their strengths are. We know Eli Manning. We know the defensive line. But what are they really going to need to do as far as scheme goes, and who else do they have to get hot and rely on here against the New England Patriots that, you know, especially on offense, is as multifaceted as anybody they've seen all season?
Well, to answer your question, I feel like two of the Giants' defensive players that really need to step up in this game are Michael Boley and Andrell Roll, whose jobs will primarily be to probably cover those tight ends. I know there's a lot of question marks around Rob Gronkowski, but the guy's such a warrior. I don't think there's any way to keep him out of this game. So Michael Boley, who is not the true middle linebacker, but he does make all the adjustments on the field, and he has a big job to make sure he disguises his defense and disguises his coverage and don't reveal too much to Tom Brady, which is what he's so good at. You know, he's great at making adjustments on the fly. So Michael Boley and Antrell Roll. Antrell Roll has been a nickelback as much as he has been a safety for the Giants this season, and I feel like they're going to put him up on either Hernandez or Gronkowski and just sort of press coverage, and they have to get those guys off their spots. They can't let them – in their first meeting, they combined for 12 catches for 136 yards and two touchdowns, and they really killed the Giants' weakness, which is our linebacking corps. It's definitely been hidden so far in the playoffs by our dominant pass rush, and that's really something that I feel like the Patriots could exploit. If they can protect Tom Brady, they can exploit the weakness in our coverage linebackers. Really, outside of Michael Boley, we don't really have anyone who can cover. I mean, Chase Blackburn was somebody we signed in November, and he's more of a run stopper, and he comes out on passing situations, and Kiwanuka comes down on the line of scrimmage, and we bring in a rookie. So I feel like if the pass rush is ineffective, it's going to be a long day for the linebacking core.
Eric Friends, New England Patriots featured columnist, and Jeff Schultz, New York Giants featured columnist, both from BleacherReport.com, joining us right now on the Average Joe Sports Show, the Sports Geeks Radio Network. We have one more segment with these gentlemen. We'll get some predictions for the Super Bowl. We'll talk about a few other news and notes items from the NFL, including the Peyton Manning situation. Kind of ironic that the Super Bowl is taking place in Indianapolis, and that might be the second biggest story right now in the city. We'll talk about all of those things and more coming up next here on the Average Joe Sports Show on the Sports Geeks Radio Network.
I look good. I mean, really good.
Hey, everyone! Come and see how good I look! I'm a man who discovered the wheel and built the Eiffel Tower out of metal and bronze. That's what kind of man I am.
Don't act like you're not impressed.
Son of a bee sting! She's turning the entire office against us!
Scorpion woman!
Loud noises! I don't know what we're yelling about!
I immediately regret this decision.
Welcome back. It's the Average Joe Sports Show here on the Sports Geeks Radio Network. Joel Cordes, Eric Friends, and Jeff Scholl hanging out with you here on the program. Got a caller joining. Fred wants to ask a question or give a point, I guess, talking a little bit about how the Giants really need to hope that the New England Patriots defense doesn't show up. Fred, go ahead.
Hey, if the Patriots defense shows up, the Patriots are going to win, no question.
Guys, go ahead and react to that. Does the X factor really come down to how the Patriots play defense? Eric, we'll start with you first.
Yeah, well, that was the one part of your question that I actually forgot to hit on, so I'm glad that Fred brings that up. But yeah, I think that, look, the defense has played a lot better over these past two playoff games, but they have done it against Tim Tebow and Joe Flacco, and that's kind of been the modus of the media up here. Throughout the regular season is that they haven't really – I mean, the last time they got burned by a quarterback was when they played Eli Manning. So I don't question whether or not the Patriots' defense is the X factor. The only thing I question is whether or not they can actually do it. And you're going up against two of the better receivers and more explosive receivers in the NFL here. So I think you're looking here at obviously what are huge matchup problems for the Patriots in the back end. And yeah, I think that definitely if they bring it – then it should be an easier game for them. I think that Vince Wilfork obviously had the big game of his career against the Ravens, in my opinion anyway. And
If he's able to get a good amount of pressure on Eli Manning, then that will really be your game changer. Because obviously, I don't think the Patriots secondary really has the talent to keep up with those receivers. So it's going to come down to whether or not they can get pressure, and I think they can. It's just a question of whether or not they execute.
Jeff Scholl, how do you feel about that? I mean, from a New York Giants fan's perspective, it's probably the Patriots offense that would typically keep people up at night. And yet maybe the point does hold true that if the Patriots can hold things down a little bit from the defensive end, that causes some problems for the Giants. Do you agree?
Yeah, Fred does make a good point. If the Patriots defense steps up, there's no question they have the ability to win this game, but that's a pretty big if. You got guys like Julian Edelman covering Anquan Boldin in the AFC Championship. If they have that matchup with a guy like Victor Cruz, it's going to be a very long day for that defense. But Eric actually made the point that I wanted to make. I thought Vince Wilfork had one of the most dominating performances in a playoff game I've ever seen. The guy was all over the field, you know, dominating double teams all game long. And if he can get that kind of pressure up the middle, I don't care how good you are, you could be Joe Montana. Pressure up the middle is the Achilles heel of any quarterback. And if you got Vince Wilfork, you know, coming through the middle and shortening Eli Manning's internal clock and Rob Ninkovich coming from the outside, there's a way to slow down this Giants offense. The Eagles proved that in their Week 11 matchup. The Giants only scored 10 points against them, and they were getting pressure all game long. So there's definitely a way to stop this Giants offense. They aren't infallible.
Guys, we'll take a quick break from the Super Bowl stuff for just a minute. As we mentioned before the commercial break, the Super Bowl happening in Indianapolis might be the second biggest story in that town, as Peyton Manning and the Indianapolis Colts appear headed for a divorce. Things haven't gotten messy yet, but you wonder if the separation has begun already. Peyton Manning going to the media a little bit to express his frustration. He did it in fairly classy terms, but it was also fairly easy to read right between the lines as he talked about what he views as a toxic atmosphere around the Indianapolis Colts franchise right now, and that certainly has to do with the changes that have gone on. They've cleaned house in upper management. The coaching staff is gone. Peyton Manning might be gone. And regardless of how Manning feels about this, they had to make changes. And it doesn't matter that, yes, he was hurt, and yes, the 2-14 season was an aberration. The writing has been on the wall for that franchise for a couple of years now, as they really have not reloaded with any big-name talent, and they've been relying on a lot of undrafted, low draft pick guys to overachieve. The high-round draft picks have just not worked out. The question, and I'll throw it, Jeff, to you first and then to Eric, are the Colts making a mistake by moving on from their all-time franchise player? And that's no disrespect to guys like Unitas and so forth. Peyton Manning is the Indianapolis Colts, and here it seems like they're dancing around the issue of moving away from him. Even if they keep him for this year, the writing is on the wall. Andrew Luck is coming.
Yeah, I definitely feel like, as hard as it is to say and for them to probably admit that it's time to move on, I mean, it all starts with whether or not he's 100% in that neck injury. Neck injuries can be very serious, and guys like Steve Young, who had his career ended with injury, have come out and said that they think Peyton Manning should, you know, be as cautious as possible. And from Jim Irsay's standpoint, the guy gets $28 million on March 8th, and you don't want to pay a guy $28 million to sit on the bench again. So I feel like if he decides to go through with it and get rid of his franchise player, I don't think anyone would consider that the wrong move. Andrew Luck is the best quarterback prospect to come out of college since John Elway. And they've already kind of, told everyone that they're going to go in that direction. And I don't think Jim Irsay thinks he can get the best of both worlds, but just from a competitive standpoint, I feel like neither Andrew Luck nor Peyton Manning is going to want to ride the bench this season. So the best move for both parties is to let Peyton Manning go and try to find a way to win a championship with someone else.
Eric Frenz is the AFC guy here, and obviously we know the rivalry between the Patriots and the Colts, but Peyton Manning is a guy that all Patriots fans, no matter how much they claim to hate him, there obviously is just as much respect for Peyton Manning as a Colts fan would have for Tom Brady, even if they don't want to admit it. To see things falling apart like this, do you believe that the Colts are heading in the right direction if they're letting Peyton Manning go? or is this just the decision that has to be made?
Well, first off, I'll start with your first comment about the Patriots fans and their sentiment towards Peyton Manning. I think you're right to an extent, but I recall after the Colts visited Gillette Stadium in November, Peyton Manning issued a statement of some sort about how the Patriots fans were very respectful to him, and how, you know, a lot of them said that, you know, it was not as fun watching the NFL this year without him. So I think obviously from a Patriots perspective, you know, we all want to see him back out there and healthy. And obviously the rivalry was something else, but I agree with Jeff. I think it's time for them to move on. I think that, you know, this has been a one-man show for quite some time. And I think that really kind of, the green curtain got pulled back on them this year. And I think that, it's time for them to start rebuilding, and you have to start with number one pick, and obviously that being Andrew Luck. I think Jeff touched on it that, you know, neither of these guys are going to want to ride the bench, nor should they. I think they're both very talented players, and, you know, Peyton Manning in the right situation could flourish, and I don't think that it's right for them to either to sign him either and trade him or do something like that, because, you know, that's just not being very respectful to a guy that has meant so much to the organization and to the community over the years. So definitely wholesale changes coming for Indianapolis, and I think it's time personally. But you know, Bill Belichick touched on it before the Patriots played the Colts. He said that, you know, they have the New England Patriots, they have a program, and I think that kind of alluded to the fact that, you know, the Colts, they've been very star based, and that's kind of hurt them, because they haven't, like you touched on, Joel, they haven't really built very much from the bottom up. They've kind of more relied on those guys to overachieve, and when you do that, you set yourself up for a season like this where you lose one guy and the whole franchise goes in the tubes. So I think it's time.
My feelings, I guess, on it are, because they've moved to this point already, the bad feelings are there. It has to happen, as much as nobody wants it to, because even if they do pretend to make up, and even if it does feel like they've made up for a time, this is not a draft where you give up the number one pick, regardless of whether Andrew Luck turns out to be a bust somehow. Regardless of whether that happens, this is not one of those drafts where you give it up, just as in the same way the Indianapolis Colts worked very, very hard to get Peyton Manning rather than Ryan Leaf way back in 1998. It's just one of those drafts again. And from the standpoint that if they would keep Manning, they make up, and even if he does win the starting job at the beginning of next season for the Colts, which he most likely would over Luck unless he's not healthy, he's going to have that guy breathing down his back. At some point, he's going to get benched. Every little mistake he makes is going to be magnified. He's not going to be given a fair shot to come back and rehab, basically, and work his way into it. Because as soon as he stumbles, Andrew Luck is going to take over the reins, and those bad feelings are just going to come right back out all over again. At the same time, if Manning plays poorly or struggles at all and loses that job to Andrew Luck, career-wise, he's making a bad move. He's going to decrease his contract, his trade value big time, because it's no longer an unknown commodity. Right now, we know that Peyton Manning is hurt, but there still is that sense that this is one of the best players of all time, and he can capitalize on that out in the free agent market, even if he's not completely healthy. But if he shows up for the Colts, loses that job, people are going to start to wonder whether he's damaged goods for real at that point. He's going to limit his chances. He's definitely going to limit the dollar amount and all of those things that are definitely important out of this. I just think at this point, for everybody's sake, the Colts and Peyton Manning need to move on. They need to, you know, end this as amicably as possible so that they can come back in 3 or 4 years and retire a jersey with no hard feelings whatsoever. Guys, before we end the show, it's time to get you backed into a corner just a little bit. It's time for Super Bowl predictions. Eric, we're going to start with you from the New England Patriots side of things. Give me your hypothetical score and how it's going to happen.
I'm going with Patriots 27, Giants 20, and I think that I think the Patriots are going to find a way to slow down that pass rush. I think that they've done well at game plan adjusting all season long, and, you know, the second time around they've done pretty well against teams. And I think that if Brady can get into an early rhythm, then there's really it'd be really hard to slow him down. I mean, that's just kind of been the pattern all season long. And once he gets hot, he really doesn't stop until the game is over. So I would see the Patriots, you know, giving up some yards and not necessarily doing as well on defense as they have in the past few weeks, but doing enough and making enough key plays where it matters to get the win.
Jeff, same question from the opposite side.
At the Giants, 31-28, I just don't feel like the Patriots have the capabilities of stopping or slowing down Eli Manning. I know I said they have the capabilities of getting rushed with Vince Wilfork, but the Giants have done a pretty good job of keeping Eli Manning clean during the postseason, aside from that NFC Championship game. I just don't feel like, you know, the Patriots' secondary is, like you said earlier, is much maligned, and they can't keep up with the Giants' weapons. And I feel like this game is going to come down to who has the ball last, just like it did in the regular season, and Eli Manning is going to come through in the clutch like he has so many times this year already.
I guess it's time for me to finally make a pick. I see a lot of yardage in this game and not a lot of scores. Turnovers are going to happen from both teams. We won't call it an ugly game, but I do see this, as Jeff talked about, coming down to a final possession. I'm going to give it to the New England Patriots simply from the standpoint, and I'll go 20-17 in a lower scoring affair than people are expecting, just like what happened last time, but now heading in the other direction. Last time the Patriots were cocky. They were overhyped. The Giants could play that underdog card. They had the right momentum, and really the New England Patriots just had it coming. You know, karma, whatever. They had it coming for that loss to occur in the Super Bowl. But now there aren't any surprises here. Bill Belichick knows what Tom Coughlin is. The Giants know that just in his equal measure back with the Patriots. There's no upset potential here. This is a very evenly matched game. I'll put it down to a field goal. I hate to jinx a guy. I don't know if Tynes can knock down the big one here again. I'll go with Gostkowski instead, but I'll be plenty happy if I'm wrong on this too. For all of my guests who joined me on the Average Joe Sports Show today, Will Liebenberg from BleacherReport.com, Dan Luig, the smartest man alive, joined us from Major League Baseball, and to you two guys, Eric Friends and Jeff Schultz, thank you so much for being with us here on the program. We will be back next week, same time, same place. This is the Average Joe Sports Show here on the Sports Geeks Radio Network. I bid you adieu.
You can take away our phones and you can take away our keys, but you cannot take away our dreams.
That's right, because we're like sleeping when we have them.
What you've just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.